As you can see on the slide, the question or topic that was submitted was about gambling, to discuss whether it's right or wrong, including things that some people may not realize is gambling, such as the lottery. So that's what we're going to do in the course of our study this evening. And we've given you a sheet, asked the question, what is gambling, and to define gambling. There are two different definitions. Anybody want to volunteer what the two definitions are, or at least one of them? A game of chance played for money. That's one definition. Anybody got a different one? Totally different concept of gambling? All right, take risk in action in hope of what? A desired result. All right, so here's an act or undertaking involved risk of loss. That's what Rocky had. And so when a farmer goes and plants his crop, he doesn't know if there's going to be a windstorm to blow it out or a sandstorm or a rainstorm. When I lived in West Texas, those fellows would plant their crops and may lose everything. It was a risk. But they had a desired result. They were willing to take that risk and in order to have a crop, support their families. Other businesses are similar. Then there is the definition that John gave, to play games of chance for money or some other stake, and that's what we're going to be looking at in our study. It's very important that we understand something about the kind of gambling that we're going to be studying about in this class tonight. We're going to be referring to this throughout the course of our study, that the gambling that we're talking about depends on the inevitable loss of others. You cannot have this kind of gambling work unless other people lose. In the course of our study tonight, if we get far enough, we'll demonstrate how that's different from a business undertaking, buying stocks, planting a field, etc. But if this kind of gaming or gambling, to make it work, somebody must lose. Several examples of the kind of gambling that we're talking about tonight. I don't know if you've been to Nevada or to any of those places where they allow gambling. I went to South Lake Tahoe, and on the Nevada side, it was really depressing. Everywhere you went, there was gambling. You get off the airplane, walk through the airport, there's people, it might be 2 o'clock in the morning, they're holding up, running those slot machines. Sad. You go into McDonald's, there's one. Everywhere you go, there's casinos. Of course, they're just filled with them. And of course, in the casinos, there's a roulette wheel where they spin the thing. There are games that go on, like blackjack. And so those kind of things are certainly associated with what we're talking about tonight. Then there's the state and national lottery, where people buy tickets in hope of winning, or buy a scratch-off card and hope that their scratch-off and the numbers will be sequential to match the number and win from that standpoint. And then there is sports gambling, horse tracks, dog tracks, where people gamble to win. There are football pools that fellas get into. Everybody puts in a certain amount of money. The winner gets all the money. And then there's just, I put local, small time, you might say, gambling, pitching pennies, raffle, bingo, those kinds of things. These are just samples of the various kinds of gambling that we're talking about. This kind of gambling, for somebody to win, many must lose. Remember that as we go through. Okay? Now, we ask you some questions. We ask you about some verses. The word gambling is not mentioned in the Bible. And so how do we approach this subject? There are principles that bear upon our study. So we gave you some verses and asked you what principles are found in those verses that might bear on the question of gambling and whether or not it's something we, as children of God, ought to be partaking in. Romans chapter 13, verse 7 through 10. I don't know what you put on your sheet. You put what I've got on the slide. Love your neighbor as yourself. How important is that law? Second greatest commandment. Second greatest commandment. Jesus said on this one and that one about loving God, every other commandment depends or hangs. So you find that in Romans chapter 13 and verse 9. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. But then, he gives some practical application as to what it means. How does he describe what loving your neighbor does in the passage? Sir? Love does no wrong, no harm to a neighbor. What are some specifics that he gives? Adultery, murder, stealing. You don't commit adultery. Why? Because it hurts your neighbor. You don't covet his property. It hurts your neighbor. You don't bear false witness. It hurts your neighbor. This is the second greatest law. Ten commandments, four, based on loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Six, loving your neighbor. The first one of those is relative to your mother and father. And so, love your neighbor. You know, we can talk about being doctrinally correct about a piano in the building. We can talk about singing songs, the right kind of songs. We can talk about putting money in the plate. We can talk about attending services. But we are under obligation to love our neighbor and do him no harm or no wrong or no ill. Various versions translate that differently. If we find that gambling works ill to our neighbor, if we find that it's harmful to society, is it something that we want to be involved in? So that's, I think, a valid principle and question. The second verse that we gave you was 1 Corinthians 10:24. I'm not going to put it up here this time. I'm going to ask you first. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 24. What did you put for that one? What? Seek the good of your neighbor. It says, let no one seek his own. Now, the word good is in italics. And some versions put good. If you could put whatever you want there. I put up on the slide interest. Let no one seek his own good or interest. It's not there. Let no one seek his own is what Paul wrote. But, he said, that of his neighbor. What of his neighbor? And so, you could put the word good again. The New King James Version, it tells you it supplies it, but it does supply the word well-being. The well-being of your neighbor. Now, the application of this particular text is eating meats that have been offered to idol. Was eating meats offered to idol forbidden? No. On what principle would a person not eat that kind of meat? It hurt his neighbor. It did ill. And in this particular case, we've got people that come out of idolatry. They're now worshiping the one true God, but back in their minds are still those idols. You don't want to encourage them to do something that would involve them in idolatry. So you don't, even though you believe the meat's okay, you can eat it, there's this principle, growing out of the law of love your neighbor, that you do no harm to your neighbor. Now I'm going to introduce a couple others that were not on your sheet. Look at Ephesians 4:28. All of these are simply expansions or practical applications of this great law of love your neighbor. He who steals must steal no longer. Is that it? Just quit stealing? What else? What must he do? Work. Work so he can have a better chariot. build them a better house, have two stories instead of one, lay up for retirement. Is that what the verse says? Sir? Be able to share to help others. And so here is a working. We ever think about that when we work? Not just for self, but working so I can share with somebody else. If the act of gambling actually, instead of helping people, robs people, makes it more difficult for them financially, is it something that I can do as I'm putting on this new man in Christ? You'll have to answer that. It's just a principle. You'll have to apply it. But it sure looks like it's a principle that would have a bearing if, indeed, gambling is injurious to your neighbor. Here's another passage. Look at 1 Corinthians 5 and 1 Corinthians 6. Corinthians 5:10, we're to withdraw from the covetous and swindlers. This version says, same thing in chapter 6, verse 10. He talks about the swindlers who will not inherit the kingdom of God. Using fraud to take what belongs to your neighbor. Suppose you promise your neighbor all kind of great promises, but you don't deliver. He gives you a bunch of money. You promise a lot. Man, I've got all these promises here. You just give me some money. And then, okay, 6 months from now, you promise your neighbor, you know he's gullible. You make him some more big promises, but you don't deliver. A year from now, you make some more big promises. Man, you'll be able to quit work if you help me with this. Give me $1,000. What are you doing? Is that swindling? And so is gambling a swindle? You think about it. I know this. I don't want to be guilty, whatever this is. It's not good for my neighbor. And so if indeed it is defrauding my neighbor and bringing injury to him, it seems like these scriptures would apply to the question about gambling. Is it right or wrong? Is it something that I should be participating in? Well, that's what happens. Linda asked about robbing your own family. Of course, swindling usually involves fraud, and there you just pay your duty. And we'll talk more about the injurious effects of that later. But that is true. But I think some have called gambling the state's biggest swindle. Make all these promises to people that get all their money and it never delivers, except maybe to one person. And then on top of that, which we'll talk about later, supposed to help with education and roads and jobs and all of that. Where's all of that? But nevertheless, by design, gambling depends on the inevitable loss of others, regardless of their suffering. Harm to fellow man is inherent in its practice. Here's some questions. Tell you what you can do. I've got reference notes. I'm not going to use them in this class. If you have a computer, you can go to the web. You can do your own research. There are articles on gambling. There are articles that states have published about gambling. There are articles that organizations have gathered data about gambling and its effects. You go read them. Make up your own mind. Some of them are statistical studies. Some are things that people have observed that's been involved with it. But here are some questions. Does the loss associated with gambling cause injury to society? Is it just an isolated incident that the injury is, or is it kind of widespread where gambling is present? You know, if it's isolated, you might say, well, that's kind of an exception to the rule. But if it's widespread, you have to wonder about that, don't you? Is it uncommon or usual? Is it the usual practice that or outcome, that where there's gambling, you have these problems? And then finally, do people suffer as a result of legalized gambling? And this points to what Linda just brought up. And there are studies, and there are there's data from history that point to the fact that gambling does hurt families. Children are deprived. Families are not provided for because the money went for gambling. Hey, I'm going to hit it big one day. And families are hurt, according to the people who've done more, a lot more research than I. It increases crime, both street crime and organized crime. Big business. And it especially negative impact poor and low income. You ever go into a 7-Eleven or gas station and watch who's buying those tickets? You ever notice what kind of car they're driving? What kind of clothes they're wearing? Are they people that have just bukus of disposable income to throw away? You think about it. You say, well, that's not me. But if you support gambling and if you participate in it, do you have a share in that? Do you want to be identified with something like that? Remember, love your neighbor, second greatest law. Is gambling something that demonstrates a love for neighbor or simply self-satisfaction? We'll talk more about that as we go. Here's Luke 12:15. Well, there's the answer. I don't know what you wrote down. Look at Luke 12:15. Of course, the principle that bears on our issue in this verse is the warning against covetousness or greed. Now, when people think of covet, for example, turn to Exodus chapter 20. Verse 17. If you're thinking of covet in that light, verse 17 of Exodus 20, would the man of Luke 12 be covetous? Nope. He wouldn't. Luke 12:17 is coveting your neighbor's house, wife, servant, ox, donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. The reason I point that out is we say, well, I don't want what my neighbor has, and I wouldn't take it from him. I wouldn't oppress him for it. I wouldn't try to resort to fraud to get it. So my hands are clean. But the story Jesus tells in Luke 12, this guy doesn't want what his neighbor's got. He's got probably more than his neighbor has anyway. That's not his problem. Based on the story of Luke 12, how would you define what is called here greed or covetous?
Desire for things that are overly spiritual
priorities. Right, good. Desire for things that crowds out spiritual priorities. What did God say to this man? Look down in verse 21. What was the indictment against him? Was not rich toward God. Is it wrong to be rich?
No.
David touched on that in the meeting, didn't he? Some of the greatest men of the Bible were very rich men. Abraham was rich. David was rich. Job was rich. There are some rich, godly people you read about in the Bible. So it's not being rich that's the problem. It's one's priorities, and if his life is wrapped up in that, that's what he thinks about, talks about, works about. That's what this guy did. That's what he thought about. He thought to himself. That's what he talked about. I said to myself, and that's what he involved himself in. No interest, no evidently no efforts at any spiritual service, work, advancement, serving God. It's all about things. If there's a danger in America today, this is it for God's people. So why would a person gamble? Why would they spend their hard-earned money for this? Why would they be obsessed with it? There's a danger that they're not satisfied with what they have, and they just want more and more. You notice I have on the bottom of the slide, in spite of everything we're looking at tonight, the warning about loving your neighbor, the many places you can go to show that gambling is injurious to society, the tendency to ignore all the warnings of reason and revelation because one wants to gamble is precisely covetousness. Do you think it's a danger for God's people?
Yes.
What makes you think it is? Times we live in. There's something in the text that tells you. That's a good answer. He said, beware and be on your guard. He's talking to those people in that day, and he's warning. They're out here listening to Jesus preach. But he's telling those people, beware and be on your guard. That should apply to you and me. We'll not read all these verses. You notice I got God crossed out. The reason I got God crossed out is because these verses show that's exactly what happens. What happened with Achan? What difference it make about a mantle anyway? Who cares? Why should he have cared? God said. That's why. But there was something more important to him than what God said. 1 Timothy 6:10. You read about people who leave the faith. Do you remember what that verse says? Why they leave the faith? Love of money. Love of not money. Love of it. To leave the faith, to leave the gospel behind, to give up the unsearchable riches, what would cause you to do that? Well, one thing's love of money. And over in Jeremiah 6:13, you see there that he said, from the least of them, even to the greatest of them, everyone is greedy of gain. From the prophet, even to the priest, everyone who deals falsely. Instead of telling the people what they needed to hear, who's going to pad my pocket? I try to tell these fellows that I work with, if you ever preaching for a paycheck, you better go do something else. You never preach for a paycheck. You want a job, go get one. But God must be in the forefront of our thinking, our priorities. But covetousness, that kind of gets crowded out. Then not only God, but man. We just read Exodus 20:17. Boy, my neighbor's got, look at his property over there. Or look at that beautiful wife he's got over there, or whatever it may be. That's going to hurt. Yeah, but sure like to have some of that. Romans 13:9, where love works no ill or harm to a neighbor. You can read Micah 2:2 and Jeremiah 22:17, how they oppressed and they robbed and they took people's property. That's what covetousness will do to your fellow man. So you mark out God and mark out man. That's no consideration. It's getting what you want. Dangerous. Turn us into something we thought we would never be. And so, what's the appeal of gambling? What is it if it's not hitting it big, making it rich, whatever that may be? All right, here's Romans 12:17, 2 Corinthians 8:21, 1 Corinthians 9. Now, in the first two passages, go to 2 Corinthians 8. I'll explain why we're going there instead of Romans 12. I I'm using the New American Standard Version. And in 2 Corinthians 8 and 21 says, we have regard for what is honorable. Honorable. The word that was used by Paul is a word that means good, beautiful, honorable. The reason I wanted to read that verse first is because that's the same word as Romans 12, 17, but here it's translated right. And we may think, well, I know it's right. I don't care what people think. But this is a word that does care what people think. It's not the word right in the sense I know it's right even though everybody else thinks it's wrong. It's not that kind of thing. It's what men hold to be good, and thus they translate here honorable. In the case in 2 Corinthians 8, is there any danger of Paul misappropriating the funds that were being collected? Is there any indication Paul had any tendency at all to that? That's right, he didn't want anybody to charge him with it. And so you get your messenger. You get your messenger. You get your messenger. He wants to keep everything honorable. Everything open and above board. What's honorable in the sight of man. Remember when Ezra journeyed back to the homeland, he did something similar. Looking for what's honorable in the sight of man. This is the principle. 1 Corinthians 9 doesn't use that word, but Paul talks about his ministry in the gospel. And 1 Corinthians 9, 19, he said, though I'm free from all men, I've made myself a slave to all so that I may win the more. The Jews I became as a Jew so that I might win Jews. Verse 21, to those who are without law, without law, though not being without law to God, the law of God, but under law of Christ, that I might win those who are without law. To the weak I became weak. I become all things to all men, so that by all means I may save some. I do all things for the sake of the gospel. So if something, whatever it may be, would hinder our ability to influence, use our influence for good and save souls, is it worth giving up? That's what it should be. That's right. It should be the main focus. And so, what about gambling? Here's some observations. You may have added to this list, and if you did, you let me know. But gambling is forbidden and spoken against by many religious people. Not all. I readily admit there's some churches you would go to that would tell you it's not wrong to gamble. In fact, they have their own bazaars and have gambling. So don't make the mistake saying all religious people. No, they don't. But there are many religious people who really frown on it. They abstain from it. They think it's hurtful and that it's not characteristic of being a Christian. Let's suppose it's okay in and of itself. Is this still a consideration? Here's the second thing. It's outlawed in many states due to its harmful social effects. Why in the world would states outlaw something that brings them money? Unless they've studied and discovered that along with the money comes a lot of social ills that may outweigh the funds that come in from gambling. It invites organized crime, fosters embezzlement, breeds political corruption, creates economic waste and poverty. Isn't it interesting? One of the greatest baseball players to live in our generation, right now at least, cannot enter the Hall of Fame. You know who I'm talking about, don't you? Pete Rose. Why? Did he kill somebody? Gambling. Whether you think it's hurtful, whether you think it tips men or not, Major League Baseball says we can't afford to have our guys gambling on the game. They're not Christians. So, would it be honorable? You're trying to live a moral life, a life that honors your master. Engage in something that even they realize corrupts people. Ball player may throw a game. He may not work as hard or whatever. They realize it's a danger. Okay, here's Romans 13. It's a pretty easy one, wasn't it? Violates civil law. And so if you live in a place where gambling is outlawed, this pretty much answers that question, doesn't it? Romans 13 says to obey civil law. And then here's another. Causing others to sin. Look at 1 Corinthians 8. You know that the discussion here has to do with eating meat that had been offered to idols. You know that in the Corinthian situation, there were people who had been idolaters. They'd come out of idolatry. They now worshiped the one true living God. They did not worship the idols. But in their minds, there were still these idols back there. And so here's meat that had been offered to an idol. It might be sold in the marketplace. You know you can go eat it. Doesn't bother you. Just meat. But your brother sees you eat it. Well, if brother so-and-so does it, I ought to be able to do it. And when he does it, there's that old consciousness of that idol. Because when he ate that meat for the last 20 years of his life or 50 years of his life, when he ate that kind of meat, it was in honor of an idol. What do you say? That's his problem? Verse 12. So by sinning against the brethren and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again so that I will not cause my brother to stumble. He doesn't mean stumble in the sense, well, he doesn't like the color tie you're wearing. He doesn't like the way you got your hair combed. That's not that kind of thing. Cause him to do something that would be sin in his mind. He violates his conscience. And so, it seems to me that would be a consideration. Even if you can't bring yourself to say, I don't think it's, I can't see where it's sinful, how is your participation in it going to affect somebody else who's on the line or thinks it is, but they see you and they respect you doing it? What if you cause them to violate their conscience? Somebody said, wait a minute, can't that same argument be made against the television? Sensual attire, doesn't television cause people to sin? And doesn't the way women dress sometimes cause people to sin? Yes? So does that make gambling okay? So what? That doesn't make gambling okay. And the same rule applies. If the TV is causing somebody to sin, what do? Turn it off. Change the channel. There are guys. I know some. I've met them. Others I know about. They had to get rid of their computer. Because of pornography. I mean, get rid of it totally. And so, yeah, if it caused you to sin, do whatever you need to do. And it's certainly something for ladies to think about. You ought to look in the mirror before you leave home. You ought to bend over and see what other people see. Because if you cause others to sin, think about it. Any comments, questions before we move on? Okay. Did y'all get this one? Was this too vague? Anybody get this one? Put down what I've got up here. I don't see any positive responses. Hey, good. See, my wife knows how I think. Good. Militates against God's plan for all to work. Genesis chapter 2. Is it legitimate to go back to the beginning to find out God's plan for man? Who else did that? Jesus did, didn't he, when he's asked about marriage. And so here in Genesis 2:5. No shrub of the fields in the earth, and no plant of the field sprouted. Verse 7, the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground, breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. God planted a garden in Eden and put man in that garden. In verse 15, the Lord took the man and put him into the Garden of Eden to do what? To cultivate it and to keep it. Work is not bad. We're made to work. Made by God to work. I guess I could get off on another sermon here. Are parents teaching their kids to work? Well, I'll tell you what, parents aren't teaching their kids to work. I don't want to be an oppressive parent. Hogwash. Quit stealing from them what God made them to do. God made people to work. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Make it your ambition, verse 11, to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business and work with your own hands, just as we commanded you, so that you won't have to stand on the street corner and beg. So that you'll behave properly toward outsiders and not be in any need. Get out and work. In fact, he made it so emphatic in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10, the end of the verse, if anyone's not willing to work, then he's not to eat either. Wow. That's pretty strong, isn't it? Don't work, don't eat. God's authorized plans for obtaining possessions are A, an exchange, whether of service, like we've been reading about, working, or goods, that is, like the master gave the talents to the people and they were to go and put them in the bank, for example, one thing they could have done with it and got a return for things, goods, to give back to his master, you purchase things. Acts 16, Lydia was a seller of purple, for example. And so, not just the idea of working with your hands, but it can be in goods. And then also there's the idea of a gift. We just read Ephesians 4:28, that you might share with him who has need. In Acts 11:29, the disciples determined to send relief to the brethren who were in need in a famine. Okay. Got about 5 minutes. Are you ready to hit a roller coaster and move pretty fast? Let's see what we do here. Efforts to justify. You don't have this on your sheet. I didn't know if I'd get to this at all, so I didn't even put it on the sheet. People say, well, it's no difference in farming or a business. Let me stop. So you're talking to somebody about gambling. That's what they say. There's no difference in gambling and farming. I mean, good grief, he's taking a risk. Farmer takes a risk. Fellow's going to start him a new business. You think he doesn't take a risk? Well, the bank's real cautious about loaning him money because of the risk involved. What's your response?
Doesn't he give anything
for
anybody else?
Sir?
I ain't hurt him, but doesn't he give anything for
anybody else? That's right. It's not based on the other fellow's loss. That's right. If the farmer's successful, then what? What about the consumer? He benefits, doesn't he? If the farmer's not successful, the price of tomatoes goes up. But that's the difference. And so, in the gambling we're talking about, someone must lose and someone will lose. Here's an illustration. You got 10 men. They buy stocks in a company, so this company can go. They all invest $1,000. That's $10,000. If the company does well, what happens to the men who put in their $1,000? They make more money, don't they? They all gain. And that's the intent. It doesn't always happen that way. You can lose in the stocks. You can lose in a business. But the aim is not for somebody to suffer loss, but for everybody to gain. That's what happens in business. But in gambling, most must lose. That's just the way it works. You got 10 guys. They're gonna engage in a football pool or gaming for something else over here. So each man puts in $100. That's $1,000. The winner gets $800. Other 20% for cost of the game and whoever set it up and all of that. Everybody else loses their 100 or their 1,000 or their 10,000. That's the difference. You say that was accidental. No, that's built into it. That's the way it works. If those guys don't lose, nobody wins. They must lose for the one guy to win. Because it's their money that's funding this thing. Well, this bears on a question. I could probably have it further down. Sometimes people ask, well, is it wrong to buy into a raffle? Well, it depends. If what you're going to win is purchased by the proceeds of the contributors, that's like gambling. But what if somebody just donated a new car? They just donated it. And now you buy a raffle ticket to win. Did anybody lose? No, that guy donated it for some good cause. Somebody that's sick or city beautification or something else. And so that's a little different story then. But anyway, that's just something to think about. I said, well, what about a television? Doesn't it cause loss of time and money and sometimes your family? Yeah, they do. But in gambling, someone must lose. That's inevitable. In the case of television, that doesn't have to be the case. The reason people lose their money and time and family is because of the misuse of the television. They can't control it. They ought to get rid of it. Both are wrong when used to gain it, the inevitable loss of others. And I'm out of time. We've got a number of other things here, but we're not going to have time to